Welcome to Torah Timecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Chana Meir, and today we'll be learning Parshat Chayesara. This Parsha is made up of three Prakim, Chaf Gimel, Chaf Dalet, Chaf Hei, 23 to 25, and 105 Psukim. Even though it's only three Prakim long, it's packed with so many details and so many interesting ideas to explore. So when you go onto the OU website, I have attached at the bottom a PDF of all the extra details and information that I would have loved to include, but we had to cut out because of time. So if you'd like some extra reading, please be sure to download. In the meantime, we're going to go through each aliyah, try to learn something from them, and finish off with one overarching idea. So our first aliyah starts off, V'yu chayei Sarah, 100 shana, ve'esrim shana, ve'sheva shanim, shnei chayei Sarah. The life of Sarah was 100 years, and 20 years, and 7 years. These are the years of the life of Sarah. And very interesting, even though this parasha is called Chayesara, the life of Sarah, this is all we hear about Sarah for the rest of the parasha. So we want to know, why is this parasha called the life of Sarah when this is all we hear about her? The Midrash Tanchuma teaches us that Sarah died when she heard about the news of the Akedah, and Abraham comes up to Kiryat Arba, Ma'arat HaMechpala. He wants to find a burial spot suitable to bury Sarah. And we have a fascinating exchange between the B'nai Chet, the people who lived at the time, and Avram as they negotiate payment for this piece of land in order to bury Sarah. And it's very clear when you read it that there is some form of a misunderstanding going on. The B'nai Chet, who know Avram well, they call him Nasi Elohim, he is the Prince of God. So they offer him, please bury your dead wherever you want. We'd all be honored to have you bury your dead here. Because they think that Avram is a ger, a nomad. He's going to come. Maybe he'll come later when he himself does, but that'll be the end they'll ever see of him. It's really no trouble at all to give a small portion of land for that. But Avram has a very different intention. He says, I'm a toshav. I want this land for myself to be buried, for my children to be buried, for my future descendants to come here and know that this is their land where they can come and daven. He wants it to be a respectable piece of land. And for this, he wants to negotiate a legitimate sale with witnesses and documented, paid for in full, and this is our first portion of documented legal acquisition of the land of Israel. Rav Samson Raphael Hirsch beautifully notes that there are only two places in the entire Tanakh where we have a documented, detailed sale of a real estate transaction. The first is here when Avram buys Ma'arat HaMechpelah, which is at the dawn of our staying in Eretz Israel, and the last is with Yirmiyahu, the prophet Jeremiah. Just before the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, he's commanded to buy the field of his uncle as a sign of hope. Even as the Jewish people are about to go into exile, he is buying land in a proper documented sale to show that one day we will come back. This is the frame of our story in the land of Israel. So the people of Chet call over Ephron Achiti, to whom the land belongs, and after much negotiation, Avram buys the land for 400 silver pieces of an international currency. In the second aliyah, once Avram has acquired the land, he buries Sarah. Now that Avram has successfully buried Sarah, he summons his servant. And it's interesting, throughout the entire narrative, it doesn't once mention his name. All the Mefarshim refer to him as Eliezer, and we will be discussing the story. We will also use that name, Eliezer, but he's not actually named in the entire narrative. Abraham asks Eliezer to please be a representative, a shaliach, and find a wife for Yitzchak, with two strings attached. The first is, under no circumstances is Yitzchak to marry a girl from Canaan, and Yitzchak is also not allowed to leave the land of Canaan to either meet or live in his prospective wife's home. The reason for this is Avram wants to make sure that Yitzchak is not influenced and their eventual children will not be assimilated by the foreign culture. And he knows that if the wife's family lives nearby, there will definitely be some cultural diffusion where they'll be influenced by their surroundings. And if Yitzchak has to go travel to visit the in-laws off in Haran, that the same thing will happen. But if his wife comes from afar to the land of Canaan and she can't go back because Yitzchak is not allowed to leave, they will live a life isolated from the bad influences, thereby able to instill in their children and future descendants the values of the house of Abraham. So Eliezer swears to Abraham that he agrees to these two conditions, and off he goes on his journey. In the third aliyah, we see how Eliezer takes 10 camels and he travels to Haran in Mesopotamia. He arrives towards evening and he davens to Hashem. He asks Hashem for a sign that he could know which girl is the right girl for Yitzchak. Now, it's very interesting. Generally speaking, you're not supposed to ask Hashem for a sign. This is called nichush, divination. And this story is actually brought in the Gemara as an example of people who asked improperly, but were answered anyway. And the reason he was answered anyway is because his test wasn't a random, if I roll the dice and it lands on six. The test had some logic to it. It was describing the characteristics of the house of Avram. The girl had to pass a chesed test. If she saw a stranger by the well and offered to give him water and his camels water, this demonstrated that she had the meat of chesed and was worthy of coming into the house of Avram. So it wasn't just a random test, and this is why he was answered. As soon as he's finished requesting, it's towards the evening and the young girls come out, and the pasuk tells us Rivka, Avram's grandniece, comes out towards the well. So this is us being in on the secret without Eliezer yet knowing. And Eliezer asks her for a little water, and she gives him to drink. And in the whole description of the story, it keeps saying the shorish maher, vata maher, vayim maher. She keeps running. This is very reminiscent of Abraham when he was serving his guests. He also rushed, showed his rizut in mitzvot. The second way we see a similarity to Abraham is she says a little and she does a lot. Eliezer's test was she had to offer him and the camels water. First, she just offers him a little water. Doesn't say another word. Make sure he's drunk to his fill. And only then she offers to give water to the camel. Once she's done that, Eliezer gives her extravagant gifts. And then Eliezer asks her who she is and finds out that she is the grandniece of Avram. In the fourth Aliyah, Eliezer bows and thanks Hashem for answering his tefillot beyond his expectations. Meanwhile, Rivka, with her trademark zrizut, runs to her mother and tells her everything that happened. Lavan overhears the story, sees the gifts, and runs out to see who the stranger is. So we see the house of Avraham is marked by zrizut, but it's expressed in different ways. Avraham and Rivka use it to do chesed. Lavan rushes out to see if he could get more money. At this stage, nobody realizes this is just the messenger. They think he is the suitor. They don't realize he's just the servant. So Eliezer looks after his camels and sits down with the family, but he refuses to eat until he's given over his message. This perek is the longest perek in Sefer Bereshit. It is a whopping 67 psukim because there's a lot of repetition. First, we have the whole story of what happens to Eliezer Rivka, and then we have Eliezer giving over his version of the story. And it's interesting that the two versions are very different. And the reason we have this contrast is to see that when the story unfolds as far as Eliezer is concerned, he's looking to see hints of chesed. That's why the word chesed keeps popping up. But when he tells the story over to Rivka's family, he wants to convince them to allow him to take Rivka to Yitzchak. So he speaks their language. He knows that they're idol worshippers and they are superstitious. So he wants to let them know that there's a higher power at play. So he keeps emphasizing, Hashem has blessed my master. Hashem gave my master a child at a very old age. My master told me Hashem would be with me. Hashem sent Rivka. Hashem answered my prayers. He keeps weaving in that there is a higher power orchestrating all the events. And the unstated message is, you'd be smart to cooperate because this is bigger than you and me. And Betuel and Lavan get the message because once they've heard Eliezer speak, they say, Vaya'an Lavan u Betuel, Vayomru. Lavan and Betuel answer, they say, Me Hashem yatsa davar. This matter comes from Hashem. Lo nuchal daber alecha ra'o tov. We can't say anything good or bad. It's out of our hands. So his method worked. Fifth Aliyah. Eliezer gives the family gifts to seal the deal and they all sit down to eat. However, the next day, there's a bit of a snag in the plans. We don't see Basuel anymore. Rashi claims that Basuel died that night, but not all the Mepharshim agree, because some Mepharshim say that Lavan and the girl's mother are going to sneakily try to keep Rivka behind. But in those days, the girl didn't really have a say in the engagement. Once the father decided that the match had gone through, there was no more negotiations. That's why his name is not mentioned in here, because this is behind the scene meddling to try and keep Rivka behind. And we see this is going to echo later on with Lavan. Well, it's the same Lavan, but he's going to do the same thing with Yaakov, where he's going to try withhold Rachel and Leah and then make Yaakov stay longer and keep delaying his departure because he realizes these descendants of Avraham and anyone connected to the house of Avram is a huge source of bracha and he wants to hold on to them as long as possible. But Rivka's not playing along. Vatakam Rivka v'narateha v'tirkavna al hagmalim v'telachna acharei ha'ish. Rivka and her maids rose, they go on the camels, they follow this man. They go all the way back to the land of Israel. And at this point, v'yitzchak ba mibo be'er l'chayroi. Yitzchak came back from be'er l'chayroi. That was, if you remember, where Hagar was. And from here, the Mepharshim say that Yitzchak was involved in making sure that Avram went back to Hagar. He said, why should I get married and my father should be alone? Vayetze Yitzchak lasuach basadeh. Yitzchak went out lasuach. We don't yet know what that means. In the field, lifnot erev, towards evening. Vayisai nav, he lists his eyes. Vayar vihineg malim, he sees a camel caravan. Vatisa Rivka etaneha, but Rivka lifted her eyes. Vateret Yitzchak, she sees Yitzchak. So they see each other at the same time. Yitzchak notices just a camel caravan, but Rivka notices Yitzchak, and she is overwhelmed by his nobility. Now, what does the word lasuach basadeh mean? Rashi interprets lasuach as to pour out your heart in prayer, to speak in prayer. He's davening mincha, because we know Yitzchak institutes mincha. And when Rivka sees Yitzchak, he's standing in prayer. The Netziv tells us, Rivka was so overwhelmed by the sight of Yitzchak davening, she covered herself with her veil and lowered herself from the camel. And for the rest of their story, she always feels inadequate in his presence. He is so much greater than her. And this is why she can never approach him with the same frankness that Sarah talks to Abraham and Rachel talks to Yaakov. When she's concerned about her pregnancy, she goes to Shem and Aver. When she's worried that Yitzchak's making a mistake with the brachot, she doesn't confront him. She has to do a whole trick because she feels so in awe in his presence. When Yitzchak sees her, the pasuk tells us, "Vayivyeha Yitzchak ha'ohela Sarah imo." Yitzchak brings her to the tent of Sarah, his mother. Why? Because Rivka is not just going to be his wife; she has an additional role to play. She is one of the imahot, our foremothers. She has a very large responsibility, and he has to see if she is up to it. What was the tent of Sarah? We know there were the three miracles. There was a cloud that was on top of the tent. We know the candles that Sarah lit on Friday stayed lit all the way till the next Friday, and the dough that she baked on Friday stayed fresh. These are all reminiscent of the miracles that would one day happen in the Mishkan. So essentially, the tent of Sarah was Sarah bringing down the Shekhinah into Abraham's home. Yitzchak wanted to see if Rivka could do the same, because ever since Sarah died, the Shekhinah had been missing. So the pasuk carries on. Vayikach et Rivka vatiilo leisha. He brought her in to the tent. She was able to bring back these miracles, and only then he marries her. Ve'yaveh, and he loved her. Ve'yinachem Yitzchak acharei mo, is finally comforted from his mother, because he saw that Rivka is not just able to be his wife, she can fill the shoes of being one of the matriarchs. In the last aliyah, it tells us about the end of Avram's life. It says Avram took a third wife, Keturah. We did mention that this could possibly be Hagar under a different name. Keturah means like Ketoret, incense. Her deeds were sweet, but not everyone agrees that it's Hagar. Some say it was a third wife. And in fact, there's a midrash that said Avram had three wives, one from each of the lines coming from Noach. Sarah came from the line of Shem. Hagar came from the line of Cham, and Keturah came from the line of Yefet, because when it said, "V'nivrchu v'cha komish b'chot adama," through you all the families will be blessed. It doesn't necessarily mean blessed, it means grafted. Avram was able to almost share his genes with all the families of the earth, so that when all these nations would one day spread and grow, they had deep in their DNA the principles of Avraham that would one day in the future come to fruition. The DNA of monotheism, the DNA of kindness, the DNA of value of life and justice. These things would one day become universal principles. They were not in the ancient world, but because Avram was able to establish nations with all these houses of Noach, in the future, these principles would one day become the norm. Avraham dies at a ripe old age, but before he dies, he sends away all of his sons with gifts, making sure they're taken care of, but making the distinction that Yitzchak is his only heir. And then the parsha ends off with Yishmael's descendants. We asked at the beginning, when we started our parsha overview, why is this parsha called Chaye Sarah, the life of Sarah? Because really, we only talk about Sarah in the first pasuk, and the rest of the parsha carries on with the next generation. What does this have to do with Sarah? So if we reflect back on the life of Sarah, we notice a very interesting pattern in fancy biblical analysis term. It's called a chiastic structure, which is really just stories reflecting itself in an ABC CBA pattern, with the most central story being the linchpin that holds everything together. So we see Avram's extended family, of which Sarah is a part of. Avram follows the command of Lech Lecha. There's a famine where Avram goes down to Egypt and has to pretend that Sarah is his sister, separating from Lot, who they thought would be their heir. Avram saving Lot from being captured, and culminating in the Brit Bein Habesarim, where Hashem promises Avram he will have children coming from him, not necessarily Sarah. And then we see all of these events reflected in the opposite direction. There's the Brit Milah, where Hashem makes a covenant that his children with Sarah will be the next generation. Then we have Avram once again rescuing Lot, this time with Tefillah. And then Avram separating with his son Yishmael before he separated with Lot. And then again, a famine which forces Avram and Sarah to pretend to be brother and sister, this time in Gerar. And then the final Lech Lecha of the Akedah. And then the last update of Avram's family, where he's informed that Rivka's been born. What is the central event that ties all of this together and actually turns the tide? It's when Sarah gives up her role as Avram's main wife, so that Avram will have an opportunity to have children after the Brit Ben Abusarim, where Sarah herself has not been promised children, but Avram has. Sarah realizes that if Avram is going to be the father of nations and she personally can't have children, Avram needs another wife. She personally brings Hagar into the family. She personally sees that they're married. And then when Hagar messes things up by being arrogant, which is the equivalent of paying for a surrogate mom and finding out that the mother's actually taking drugs and ruining the fetus, she again steps in boldly, even though it makes her look terrible, to ensure that the child of Avram will be perfect. And because of this, there is the bris afterwards. Hashem promises that Sarah will have a child. And note that this promise only comes 13 years after Yishmael has been born. And we see that Sarah's been investing in Yishmael. When we have the story of the Orchem, the guests who come, who's involved in looking after the guests? Avram, Sarah, and Yishmael. Hagar is not in the picture. Sarah has embraced her role as surrogate mother. Then, when she finally has a child, Yitzchak, she invests everything that she has into ensuring that Yitzchak has the best education, even though it means sending Yishmael away. And at the end of her life, when she finds out that everything she sacrificed for was for nothing, or she thought it was for nothing, because Yitzchak was sacrificed on the Akedah, she dies. She has nothing left to live for. So we see that Sarah is the one who makes the difficult decisions throughout their marriage in order to ensure that Avraham is successful in his mission of being Av Hamon Goyim. And then Sarah dies. Who's going to carry on the legacy? Who's going to carry on fighting to make sure of the success and the continuation of the Jewish people? Avram has to step up. Avram has to make difficult decisions. And this whole parasha can be summarized in the three difficult decisions that Avram makes. First, there's the tough negotiations where he insists on paying for Hebron to make sure that the land of Eretz Yisrael will never be disputed. It is paid for with hard money so that his descendants can inherit it and live there. The second is being very forceful and insisting that Yitzhak cannot marry a local Canaanite girl to ensure that Yitzhak and his descendants will not be influenced and they'll carry on in the path of Avram. And this insistence was at the risk of insulting Eliezer, his devoted servant, and his three closest friends, Elon, Eshkol, and Mamre. Even though it might insult his friends and alienate him from the people he loved, he still took a tough stance when it involved the future of his son. And finally, at the end of his life, sending away all of his sons from his other wives to ensure that Yitzhak is the clear, unequivocal heir to his legacy. Through these very difficult choices, Avram's decisive actions ensure that Sarah's sacrifice is not in vain, that everything Sarah gave her life for would continue through Yitzhak and Yitzhak's descendants. So how does this practically apply to our lives? We all receive bracha in different forms and on different occasions, but it's not enough to just receive the bracha. You have to actively protect it. You have to actively work to make sure that that bracha comes to fruition. You can't just step back and see what happens. If Hashem blesses you with a marriage, you have to work hard to make sure that it's a successful marriage, and sometimes sacrifices are needed. If Hashem blesses you with children, you have to work hard to make sure those children are successful, doing whatever you can to make sure they have the best possible midos and being actively involved in their education. If Hashem has blessed you with wisdom so that you can learn Torah, you have to actively be involved, doing constant revision and making efforts to find the best teachers for yourself. Any bracha that Hashem blesses you with, don't just passively accept it. Actively take ownership and make sure that you do your part to bring that bracha to fruition. In the meantime, have a wonderful week.